So, questions about practice? Anything you were having trouble with, or anything in the instructions that you need clarified? You slept badly last night?
So I haven't got enough sleep.
Uh-huh.
I think it's just I'm interested in what you would kind of advise to make top priority at those times when there's quite a bit of drifting and sort of, you know, tiredness, apart from just going to sleep, because I was kind of half and half this morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting way to ask that question. The sleepiness is sort of one of the challenges of meditation. It's something that happens even if you did get enough sleep, often enough. So what to prioritize in terms of sort of working with that, or where to... I think the first thing I would say is to not give up. That is, it can be easy to think, oh, well, I'm sleepy, I might as well go to sleep, lie down. But I think that one of the effects of meditation is that it's restful. And so even when you're sleepy, sometimes you'll sink down for a while, but then often you'll come back up. There's the meditation itself will have that effect. And largely I think that's through the energy of investigation. So investigation is one of the factors of enlightenment, but it's in more practical terms, it's kind of the thing that arouses your interest and gets you to actually pay attention closely to things. So as you're sort of getting sleepy, one of the things that I find very interesting question to investigate is, what in my experience right now tells me that I am tired? How do I know that I am tired? It's sleepiness is very subtle. And you can think, well, I'm tired. So that's just, I know I'm tired. Right? But it's like, how do I know that? Something must be telling me that. So if you're sitting and you're, well, my head is dropping, so that's an indication. But what's making that happen? And just to sort of feel the energetic experience of tiredness. Because this is mindfulness meditation. And the essence of mindfulness is, what is happening right now? Not how can I make this better, you know, but what is happening? What is unpleasant about this? Why do I not want to be tired? Can I accept tiredness? Can I just say, okay, this is what's happening? And I not be like, no, I'm not meditating right, or this, I don't like this feeling. And I just go, oh, this is what this feels like. So it's, again, just investigating, just feeling fully, what does that feel like? Because the problem with tiredness is that I don't like it, and I want it to be different. And that's essentially the definition of dukkha, what the Buddha calls, what we translate as suffering. You know, the dukkha is essentially, I want things to be different from the way they are. And if I can stop wanting things to be different from the way they are, in other words, in 12-step terms, we say, if I can accept things as they are, then there's no more dukkha. There might be an unpleasant experience, but that's not suffering. That's just, oh, this is unpleasant. Suffering is, this is unpleasant and I want it to stop. And I want it to be different. So that kind of acceptance and investigation, in a sense, requires acceptance. Because if you're resisting something, you're not looking at it. You're not sort of going, well, what is this? Investigation, you have to kind of go, okay, this is what it is. You know, and you just kind of go, okay, so what is it? That's not typically the instruction I give around being sleepy, but I think it's the most important thing as you ask for the priority. And good luck. And it will change. Other questions or thoughts? Yes.
No, I just want to say that when you said during the meditation about smileys,
yes,
that really changed my experience that I was having, because I felt really, like my face felt really serious during that meditation.
Yep.
Almost kind of like fish-like, you know, that kind of grumpy.
Yep.
And then it kind of, I just had a different experience as soon as you kind of said smile, so that was really helpful. And
wonderful.
And I just want to ask, I'm meditating at the moment but for 25 minutes. I don't know why I've got this like 25-minute kind of slot. What's a good time? What would be kind of useful about the time to meditate for? What's suggested?
How much time have you got? I would say, you know, outside of the how much time you've got, as you're developing your meditation practice, try to go a little beyond your comfort zone, but not too far. Because if you create more resistance by like, oh, I've got to get through this, then you're creating aversion, and then you're not going to want to meditate. So if you can, you know, have like, oh, 25 minutes, that's really comfortable for me, then you can say, well, what happens in the extra 5 minutes if I go to 30? And again, that's a thing to investigate. Not like, I'm going to get through it, but, wow, look at what my mind is doing. Look at how my body is reacting to this. Huh. Interesting. You know? Okay. What happened? Can I accept this? I can see I'm developing my themes for the day now already. Thank you. You know? So I would play with that edge a little bit. What's important with practice, with having a practice, a daily practice, is that it's daily as much as possible. Much more than how long. Great, you know, if you can meditate for 4 hours a day, more power to you, you know. But the important thing is to, if you set up, oh, I can only meditate if I have this much time. Well, I don't have that much time, so I can't meditate today. It just gives you another out. You know, one of my teachers says, he has the commitment to sit on his cushion every day, even if it's just for 1 minute. And if he gets to the end of the day and he never had time to sit, before he gets in bed, he sits down and follows his breath for 1 minute. Now, I love the philosophy behind that, because it's that one day at a time, just show up and do the best you can and turn the results over. Anyway, I think you get the point. So, yeah. But, you know, ideally, you know, yeah, half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever. You know. And one of the things that I think is helpful, though, is to also track what happens. You know, notice if you have a day where you're like, okay, I feel like I can meditate a little longer today. Notice what happens in those further periods of time. Does it, you know, is there resistance or is there more deepening? Because sometimes I find that there are certain periods of time where there's kind of like a click. And it's like, whoa, right there, I felt it go deeper right there. And I'll notice that it is time dependent. But then there are other times when I'll be like, I'm done. You know, like, wow, I just don't feel it today. You know, it's okay. You know, if you go on retreat, on an intensive retreat, yeah, you just go through every one of those levels of resistance, and then the bell rings and you come back and you meditate again. You know, you just go on and on and on, and finally you just surrender. It's like, whatever. What's happening is what's happening, and like, whether I like it or not, I'm just showing up. And that's again why that to me harmonizes so well with recovery. Because we know, it's like you say, you know, don't drink or use even if your ass falls off. Whatever that means. I mean, some of us would like our ass to fall off. But, you know, you just don't, you know, that's just what you do. It's, and that philosophy of just showing up, that it's not about me accomplishing something in some time frame or some situation. It, you know, I'm not the one who gets to determine the results. I have a responsibility to show up and do the work. And that's where my responsibility ends. Yes?
What if meditative practice makes you feel very unpresent, like in the world?
Yeah, you're saying, what if that happens?
Yes.
Is that what happens to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
let's talk about you. I'm sorry. I just the language of saying, you know, the pronoun is important. You said, what if... So what's your do you meditate regularly, or you
not currently.
So you're just kind of, so you had an experience like that this morning of feeling that you're kind of floating? And what was the form that you practiced with?
It was
okay. So you're paying attention to sensations in your body. Are you doing the sweeping practice?
Yes, both the breath and the sweeping practice.
Okay. So there are various things to do. The first thing that comes to mind, and it's just a thought, is to open your eyes. Sometimes with the eyes closed, it's easier to get sort of spacey when the eyes are open. And that doesn't mean you're looking around, it's just that your eyes are open and you're kind of gazing down. It kind of keeps you more in your body and keeps you more like, oh, here I am. You know, particularly with people who have trauma, I've learned that many people who have trauma, when they close their eyes, the feelings come over them again. And sometimes things that were done to them, the way they dealt with it was by closing their eyes and trying to take their mind somewhere else. And so when someone says, okay, we're going to meditate and close our eyes, that brings up those memories. So that's why I've taken to saying in my meditation instruction, if you're uncomfortable with your closing your eyes in a group, just let your eyes be open. But it's that same thing, that when the mind just kind of gets really dreamy, it kind of brings you back to reality, to open the eyes. If you can, investigate, right? Because, you know, if you're doing a meditation that involves connecting with physical sensations, and your mind is going off, do you have it as a physical perception? Does your physical perception feel as if you're kind of like that floating, or is it just a mental state? Okay. So focus more on the physical sensations. That is, try to really stay with the breath from the beginning till the end. Just really stay with it, because the body, that's the grounding focus, and it really, that's what interrupts the thinking. but it's also, I'll just say that, you know, everything that happens in meditation is normal. I don't think you can describe, if it's happening to me, it's normal. It's not like, oh, there's something wrong. It's just what's happening. It might not be what you want to have happen or what you think should happen, but it's what's happening. So, again, we try to keep this attitude of observing. Oh, there you go. Okay, let me come back. Oh, wait, wow, I'm all... Oh, okay. Where is my mind? I think it's really useful to notice the thought patterns. You know, where does your mind tend to go? Where does it like to go? And you start to learn about, this is what this is how I think of meditation as inventory, right? In the fourth step inventory, it's just, when you do meditation, it's like an inventory of your own mind states and your own thought patterns. And you start to see, oh, I really get into a lot of judgment, or, you know, I really get into a lot of fantasy, or, you know, I'm always running numbers in my head, you know, I'm checking my bank account in my head. And so we start to see there are these thought patterns, and then we start to see, well, what's behind that thought pattern, right? A lot of times it's anxiety or anger or grief or something, and you see, oh, right, there's something unresolved. And that's how this, for me, meditation really is a valuable tool in the inventory process. Now, I'm not even talking about what you talked about, so forgive me for going off, but I think it's really useful because in an intentional inventory, it's kind of like we are controlling what we're going to inventory. Oh, well, I should really write about this, about my relationship with my mother, you know, and I'll just go through that anger and blah, blah, blah. But in meditation, the kind of letting go that happens and the stuff that just bubbles up and you start to see, oh, maybe there's something that I haven't really taken apart in my inventory process. Maybe there's something, you know, we get a little bit more at these core emotional patterns, mental patterns, and they're kind of layers that we can start to dig down and uncover stuff that can really open up and free us, I think, in terms of the places where we get stuck. Maybe, well, I'm not going to say right. Yes?
Can I just ask about, I've got a lot of trauma in my background. I've never heard anyone talking about trauma and meditation.
Oh.
And,
you haven't been to California. That's all they talk about.
So I think some stuff is coming up for me just then. And I was assuming it's good when stuff's being released, like trauma free notes. Or is it? I mean, should I be trying to keep my eyes open to not connect? I assumed it's healthy stuff. It's not, but I don't know.
I think it is. I mean, I'm not a therapist, and I'm not trained to work with trauma specifically. There's a lot of work now with something called somatic experiencing. And there's a guy named Peter Levine, or Levine, who has written some, and a lot of the meditation teachers in the States, at least, are using this work. But as I say, I'm not trained in it. But my sense of it, and the little I know, and my own experience of practice, is very much what you're saying. That there's a kind of releasing. That's kind of, if we can sit with and not be overwhelmed by the feelings, that if we can let them come through, that is the healing. Because there's no kind of like, I'm going to go down there and fix it, you know, and I'll just push it over there and keep it in that corner. That's where it's a problem. So but sometimes if we're not conscious of it, we don't know about it, and then we're in the middle of a retreat, and all of a sudden this panic comes up or some rage comes through, it can be overwhelming and there can be this kind of like, well, what am I supposed to do with this? But it sounds like you already kind of have a sense of it, of like, okay, you kind of understand, investigated this history of it, and you know, and when it starts to come up, you see, okay, I just need to kind of breathe and open and let it come through. And I think that's what the work fundamentally is to feel it, let it, it's kind of like letting it into the body, letting it come out through the body. And if you don't get in there and try to manipulate it, that it will play out, that energy will kind of dissipate. And yeah, it might come back through, you know, I don't know how it works long term, but in a given period of practice, I think it's about that kind of opening and letting go and allowing it and not being overwhelmed by it. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
What's the wise suggestion that does become overwhelming in that context?
Stop meditating is the first thing I would do. If in the middle of a meditation period some stuff starts to overwhelm, it's like open the eyes and kind of just, okay, now is not the time for this. And, you know, that's where we need support. Yeah, I think. And I just think the idea that I'm supposed to handle all this and I'm supposed to control all this, and, you know, if I can't handle it, then there's something wrong with me. It's more stories, right? And it's like, yeah, the meditation isn't some cure-all, you know. And I've seen on retreats where some people who had a lot of grief or something going on that was really intense, that the teachers would tell them, stop sitting. And just, there was one woman on a retreat, her son had recently died. And when the teachers found that out, they said, and she was describing her practice that, you know, it was just all this grief was coming up, and she was just sitting there crying the whole time. They said, you know, we need this French drain to be, we need these rocks moved. And so she would just sit and pick up these stones and move them, you know, and that was her practice. And that was a way of keeping her in her body, you know, touching and feeling the earth, feeling these, you know, hard, solid things, and just moving them. One teacher, Ruth Dennison, who just recently passed away, was a brilliant German woman, one of the first Vipassana teachers. She talked about, she told me about how when she was grieving, I can't even remember what she was grieving about. Maybe her husband. Anyway, she said she pointed to the mosaic on the wall of her meditation hall. It's in Joshua Tree in Southern California in the high desert. It's this big round mosaic with these tiny, you know, little tiles. She said, that's what I did when I was grieving. I just made that, you know, just one little piece at a time. And she was a meditation master. And that was how she, you know, she didn't say, oh, I just meditated through it. She said, no, I did. And also, doing something creative, too, has the that positive effect of having a sense of making something, creating something, that feeling of accomplishment and expression. I think creativity is one of the great healing practices. So one more back here.
Yeah, I engage in the 12-step meditation all the time. What's happening recently, well, I'm going to say first that I've got a bit of singing and playing suits in my days. And the tunes keep playing in my
Welcome to my world, as they say. Yes.
I've got you under my skin.
Frank, yeah.
But they're really anarchic, you know. I don't invite them.
Yeah, indeed. But you did invite them. As they say, you know, everything that you've ever taken in. You know, every TV commercial. Have you seen this movie Inside Out? It's such a perfect like meditation movie. And one of the things, it's inside the head of a 12-year-old girl. Her thoughts and feelings, and each of the emotions, there's like six emotions or something, is as a character that is that personality. But my favorite part about it that really reminded me of meditation is that sometimes this TV commercial for toothpaste pops up into her mind. And it's like exactly what happens on a retreat. All of a sudden you start hearing this jingle from when you were 7 years old. You're like, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. So it's just in there. You know. I've tried everything. Sometimes, you know, the album will start to play and I'll be like, oh, I'll just let it play till the end. But guess what? It starts again from the beginning. So that doesn't work. The only method that sometimes works for me with music is that I start to listen to actual sounds in my environment. And it kind of shifts my hearing consciousness into something that's actually there. But mostly, I just have to remember it's impermanent. You know.
But something I've noticed here, you know, is that when I'm in an atmosphere like this, ambience is like this, the tunes don't bother me. I know this is the Or when I'm interacting with someone, you know,
yeah.
I've got you under my skin and Volare hasn't come.
Volare, that's really
bad. So hey, there may be something about this.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just because it keeps changing. It's not like things are going to stay the same all everywhere. And you can start to see that different situations evoke different things. But when I'm on retreat, usually what's playing, starts playing in my mind is the music I was listening to right before the retreat. So there's that old strategy of don't listen to music for a week before you go on retreat. Whatever. These are all efforts to control the mind. And the first step is we admitted we were powerless over our minds, that our thinking had become unmanageable. So I think let's take a little break. And so we're not in silence today. So one of the things I would like you to do during the break is to at least greet and preferably also introduce yourself to someone you don't know who's here. That's your practice for the break. And we'll ring a bell in about 10 or 12 minutes and come back. So just a quick stretch, restroom, drink water. Don't open any electronic devices.